into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
Welcome to another edition of the Spoiler Room. It's another episode here, and we are closing out our badass Women's Month in a most super bad way. And tonight, I have a great crew with me to talk about the 1974 classic Foxy Brown. And first up, he is back in the Spoiler Room. Please welcome Mr. Astro Radio Z himself, Mr. Derek Carey. Hello, Derek. How are you?
Hey, Marky, Miss Mark the Movie Man.
I like that.
Hey, Mark.
I think I may need you to record a new intro, and then I'll put that on a personal speaker, and I'll just play that every time I walk in a room.
It'll be like I'm going to get you, sucker. You're going to have a backing band that follows you everywhere you go, and it's just going to be my horrible falsetto ringing through the streets.
That'd be awesome. Awesome. And next to Mr. Derek Carey is Mr. Glenn Bittner, the BFD himself. Hello, Glenn.
Hi.
How you doing tonight, sir?
Yeah.
You feeling funky?
Oh, you know it.
Oh, yeah. And next to the BFD, Scotty D is in his house tonight. Hello, Scott. Welcome back to the Spoiler Room.
All right, let's land this motherfucker.
Yes, and tonight, folks, we are talking about Foxy Brown, directed by Jack Hill.
When Foxy Brown comes to town, all the brothers gather round, 'cause she can really shake 'em down.
Foxy lady, Foxy lady.
Pam Grier, that one chick hit squad who creamed you as coffee, is back to do a job on the mob as Foxy Brown.
You tell me who you want done, and I'll do the hell out of it.
A chick with drive who don't take no jive.
That woman, she's crazy. There's no telling what she'll do.
She's sweet brown sugar with a touch of spice.
If you see a man anywhere, send him in, because I do need a man.
And murder if you don't treat her nice.
Sounds like a public menace.
Sure do.
Foxy's got guts. No ifs, ands, or buts.
I better warn you, I got a black belt in karate. And I got my black belt in bar stools.
She won't budge when she carries a grudge.
I want justice for all of them, whose lives are bought and sold, so that a few big shots can climb up on their back.
Sister, I think what you're asking for is revenge.
So there ain't no hope for dudes who deal dope.
I swear, baby, I don't know what you're talking about.
We're gonna kill ourselves a couple of niggas.
No fear, Pam Grier is here as Foxy. Foxy Brown.
Now, this story, written and directed by Jack Hill, the IBIM summary is actually pretty good about it. It's a voluptuous black woman takes a job as a high-class prostitute in order to get revenge on the mobsters who murdered her boyfriend. And yes, folks, that is the actual plot to this. There's a lot of great stuff in here, but let's go down as we always do and just get initial reactions from the crew. Let's start off tonight with Glenn. Glenn, what is your feeling, your initial feeling with Foxy Brown? Do you remember when you first saw it?
Ooh, it was probably in college.
Mm-hmm. And how'd you feel about it?
Great radio, Glenn. This is great radio.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love Glenn.
I'm never first, so it took me by surprise.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not used to that. So, no, I would have been in college. I'm pretty sure it was in college. I remember what it was, because we watched this and we watched Coffee. And what was the other one we watched? I don't remember the other one, but I remember watching these two. Oh, it was four movies. It was this, Coffee, Black Belt Jones, and Hot Potato.
Wow.
Oh, shit.
Nice. Yeah.
What an amazing film. Well, not Hot Potato, but the rest of them, what an amazing festival.
Well, it was at a friend's house, but yeah, I remember watching it. It was a good night. This was the third movie we watched. So, apparently he didn't feel we could handle, Pam Grier back to back. So he broke it up by throwing the, Black Belt Jones in between Coffee and Foxy Brown.
Ah.
So, I remember liking it. I grew up watching a lot of, whenever I could get my hands on from the video store, and this one is one that I'd never seen. I'd seen Coffee before, but I had never seen this one. And I hadn't seen a lot of the whole blaxploitation films. I'd seen a lot of movies from the 70s that were, the white versions of these, where they try to be cool, but they're not. This is a fun flick. I mean, it's, As Mark reminded me when I rewatch it, it's got some great puppet deaths. So yeah, no, this is a fun one.
Yeah, Scotty D, how about you with this film, Foxy Brown?
I can't remember the first time I saw it. See, I always get them mixed up, and I think I saw this one way before I saw Coffee,
mm-hmm.
and. Even though there's kind of four main blaxploitation films that are celebrated for the Pam Grier things, she did more than that. But there's Coffee, and then the other ones being Shiva Baby and Friday Foster. This and Coffee are the ones that you can mix up really easily, because those are the ones that are directed by Jack Hill. And Jack Hill. Of course, I wanted to see the movie anyway. It has such a pedigree to it, but I wanted to see it because I love Jack Hill. And this one does not disappoint. And I remember seeing it years ago, loving it. Visited a few years later, loved it again. Just watched it again for this show. And when you watch this this movie, I kind of think I figured out which one do I like more, Coffee or Foxy Brown. It's close, but I think I like Foxy Brown more.
Oh, nice. Nice. And Derek, Carey, how about you, sir?
Well, I want to say I first saw this probably around the same time Glenn did. Back in late high school, like right before I graduated in early college, I really got into blaxploitation films because I had bought a VHS box set of Dolomite. I just like those movies killed me so much that then I went and sought out Shaft and Superfly, and it's just a rabbit hole once you go down there. And then, of course, as Scott had said, that Jack Hill directed these movies. I mean, it wasn't even Pam Grier that pulled me into this movie. It was Jack Hill, because, Spider Baby and all the other films that he had put out there. And once I saw Coffee first. And the moment I saw Pam Grier, I was like, this is the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. I was just instantly, she was this. She was such a charismatic and commanding force on screen that there's no way that at any time she could be laying down sleeping, I still would be captivated entirely watching whatever she's doing. I saw Foxy Brown after I saw Coffee. And unlike Scott, I actually like Coffee more than I like this. I like the soundtrack to Foxy Brown a lot more. Willie Hutch's score is so awesome. It's so iconic. I put it right up there with Curtis Mayfield. I put it right up there with Isaac Brown or Isaac Hayes. I put it up there with the classics. Foxy Brown is one of my all-time favorite blaxploitation soundtracks, but this is a fun one. Not to say this isn't a good movie. I just prefer Coffee a little bit more than this one.
Yeah, and for me, in all honesty, I have not actually watched the full movie until we did this show. I've seen scenes. I've seen bits and pieces. I caught it when I was younger on cable. You know, I'd catch like the tail end. I remember the finale of this film I had watched, but not the full film from start to finish till I had bought that VHS that I had found, which I have the Orion VHS, and watched it and. Oh man, I love this film. Yeah, Pam Grier, man, she just, I mean, she commands the screen and talented as well as beauty with her. And in this movie, I really loved her character. Which, I mean, she's the title character, but the way she was written and everything about the film, the way it played out was just, I was like, I want to watch this immediately again because I had so much fun with this movie. And it surprised me in a number of ways as well, which we can get into. But I mean, from the opening scene, which Scott, what do you think of this opening scene? It's kind of almost like a James Bond opening, isn't it?
Oh, you mean the title sequence?
The title sequence, yeah. The opening title sequence is kind of James Brown. I mean, James Bond style almost, the way they handle this with the direction.
Absolutely, I think that with the opening. Now I understood that the time was kind of tight on making this movie, if I remember hearing correctly. So I was surprised and happy that they could do what they did with this opening, which was, okay, you've seen, by this point, they may have seen some of Pam Grier's Women in Prison movies, like Big Bird, Cage, Black Mama, White Mama. They may have seen Coffee. They may even, I think Scream Blackula, yeah, Scream Blackula Scream came out before this. Mm-hmm. But they're like, okay, now, so you know what she can do in the lead because you saw Coffee. That was your tease. Even though you've seen her in these other movies. Yeah, let's face it. She's pretty fantastic, isn't she? And that's basically what the opening credits were. It was this wonderful James Bond celebration to say, that's right, she's a female action hero, but she's also kind of more than that. Because I think that in addition to the effects and the great way that it drew you in, it also kind of, even this opening... and I think it's just because Pam Grier is just so inviting. It kind of drew you into, she's more than that. She's got, you know, she's got sass, she's got soul, she's got her own style. She's not just a female version of a male figure, but the male figures should look out because, you know, Pam's on the case now. So, you know.
Yeah, I dug this title sequence. I mean, it's just pulled me right in. Derek, what about you for the title sequence with what we get in here with this kind of choreographed dance James Bond type of hybrid opening?
Well, of course. You got that amazing song and you get to see Pam Grier giggle, jiggle around a bunch. It's fucking amazing. Of course. I watched that. It could have been 90 minutes of just Pam Grier flopping around. I would have watched the whole damn thing and thought it was I would have given it 5 stars or 5 raging boners. That's what I would have given it.
Glenn, how about you? Does this kind of, this opening, did it pull you in a bit for it and kind of help set up right away of what type of character you're in for with Foxy?
Well, I kind of already knew what I was in for with Foxy, just knowing it was Pam Grier. But yeah, no, I can definitely see that. And it's definitely fitting for the movie and for the role.
Yeah, and I think it sets it up so well that when we get this opening where we were introduced to her brother, Link, played by Antonio Fargas, and he calls her up because he's in trouble. I mean... from right there, she mows down guys with her car in this opening scene without hesitation. I mean, and from there on, she just stays badass. I mean, she's the main character in this film. And, you know, watching this, I don't think there's a point in here, even when she gets in trouble later on in the film with the drug the drug leaders are that she ends up crossing paths with, who were the reason why her boyfriend got killed. Even when she gets captured and they do mean things to her, she still maintains to command some strength. Would you agree with that, Glenn? Does her character kind of stay consistent, which is something we don't actually see in a number of female characters?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's not really an arc for her. I mean, she starts strong and she finishes strong, which is fine. I mean, you're not ever, you know, it's not some, you know, journey of her discovering herself or, you know, reaching down and finding inner strength. She just like, she's a badass mom and that's it. Period. Done.
Yeah. Like Antonio Fargas says, she's a whole lot of woman.
Yes.
Derek, are your pants off right now? I just, I
plead the fifth.
She is, though, and she commands strength constantly throughout. Scott, would you say she does stay consistent, which is something you don't necessarily see out of at least earlier female, characters that we've seen written for film?
Well, I wouldn't say that, strong, yes, certainly strong-willed. I wouldn't say that she's invulnerable because she is caught off guard at one point. She does have that whole really unpleasant sequence at the ranch with the people making all the smack and everything and drugging her and everything like that. And she unfortunately is caught off guard enough where that she has to wait for an opening to regain the upper hand. Now, having said that, as soon as that opening is available, she jumps right at it and she attacks it. So she is definitely a very strong character. She's not Supergirl, but she is definitely a very strong character who keeps her wits about her. And she seems to have a singleness of purpose, too. She knows exactly what she stands for, and she doesn't lose sight of that.
Yeah, you never feel like she gets distracted from her goal, especially when her boyfriend you could tell she truly loves this guy who was a secret informer who got a different identity, and she gets betrayed by her brother and that. But you never feel like at any point she loses sight or decides, I'm checking in. I mean, she stays true to her goal, doesn't she, Derek? I mean, she's a determined woman.
Yeah, she is, and I think a lot of credit has to go to the editorial of this movie, is that while there's times at which she is caught off guard and she is made vulnerable, we don't wallow in it. I mean, there could have been opportunities where, you know, because this movie gets pretty heavy at times. It's not just your standard light kind of action film. There are times where the women really get put into some heavy situations and some dark situations, and we're there just long enough to feel something for these people, and then we move on from it. I know back in the day there was a lot of controversy about this movie because, you know, we're talking about it at the time of civil rights, and the Black community was just starting to gain some strength and trying to put out a good foot forward and portray themselves in a good way in cinema. And then Foxy Brown comes out, and you know, you have Pam Grier basically posing as a prostitute and then getting tied up and raped, and she's naked here and there and flaunting herself and all this stuff. Now, I suppose if you wanted to look at her character, Foxy Brown, and how she's portrayed on a very surface level, you can do that. But I don't feel at any time that she is doing it because she is a weak character. She has her head on her shoulders and knows what she's doing at all times. And thankfully, our director knows that that is the way her character should be portrayed, and we don't wallow in the exploitation. That's why, just like Scott had said before, there was that sequence where she gets put out into the ranch, and we're dealing with a couple rapist drug dealers, and there's some unpleasantness, and we're about to get to the unpleasantness, and it like artfully fades out and goes to the next scene. And thankfully, we don't wallow in that shit, where I think in the hands of a lesser director and a lesser editorial staff, and this is an exploitation film, let's be serious about this, they would have showed that stuff. So as a character, this was just confidently portrayed. And I think it's one of the, I mean, there's a reason why Pam Grier has gone on to make a career of being a strong female role model, not only for black women, but women in general, is because she is portrayed in Foxy Brown this way, where she goes through some really heavy, dark stuff, but still kicks everyone's ass and never backs down and falls apart.
Yeah. And that's what I loved about her character. And it surprised me. I'm going to say I was very surprised to how they actually handled those heavier scenes. Like you said, I mean, films like this done in this style and the blaxploitation that have this reputation of just showing some of the, you know, the really just showing the exploitation, exploiting some of these darker scenes, but where you would expect it, it actually does take a more subtle or softer approach, if you will, to leave it up to the audience of exactly what is going down, you know. And I enjoyed that. I think sometimes that's lost in today's cinema. Glenn, what would you say about that? Would you say that those are kind of surprisingly well handled, considering this is a exploitation film?
I suppose, yeah. I mean, considering what some people might expect from it, sure.
Yeah, you know, and I was very impressed with that it didn't go there. I mean, it's still implied, especially later on when they chop you know, they chop the guy's dick off and whatnot. But did you appreciate it? Would you say that maybe sometimes films like this get a bad rap because there are ones out there that would show everything, but there are many like this that take a different approach?
I am often of the less is more philosophy when it comes to a lot of stuff, just because some people think that more is not enough, so they have to have more and more. I think it works great. I prefer it in a lot of ways. I don't need to see some dude get his junk cut off, usually.
Are times, Glenn, that you do need to see the guys jump.
Well, no, I think it works in some instances. There was the short film, I think it was She.
Yeah.
It worked in that film.
Right.
Because that was, I mean, first of all, that was a horror film, but also just it worked in what they were going for. You needed it to be more visceral. This one, you don't need, I mean, you can imply it, and it's just like, yeah, that's all you need to do. I mean...
Yeah,
if Foxy was some mewling little kitten of a woman, then you might need to be a little more graphic. But she's not, so it's like, you know, there's no secret what's happening here,
right? Scott, what do you think about the less is more approach and how they handled some of the darker scenes in here?
Well, I think a lot of it, and I think this is probably why AIP was okay with letting him get away with it. Say, like, if this was, like, say, for, like, New World Pictures, you know, Roger Corman's outfit back in that day, they might not want to say less is more. You know, they might want an approach that was more in tune with, say, like, the Big Bird Cage or something like that. AIP would have been okay with having kind of a more subtle approach, because as Derek acknowledged, this is still an exploitation film, whether we say it's artful or not. It's Jack Hill's screenplay. Jack Hill's screenplay is... We remember all these nice, goofy bits to the story and everything like that, but That is a brutal script in parts. That is really heavy duty stuff. But it keeps on moving. There's really never a dull moment in this thing. It just keeps on popping and everything. So I think there were enough exploitation beats where he could get away with saying, we don't actually need to show her get assaulted. We don't actually need to show the ding dong come off. And in fact, it actually works better because there's the great long build-up joke when she delivers that at the end. What's in it? I don't know. It looks like a pickle jar. And there's just that long look. You don't need to see. It actually works better in that case. And I think that the way he could get away with not showing the stuff was because there was so much happening in the script that it's like, yeah, you've got enough beats for an exploitation film. You don't need any more. The script pops. It keeps moving. So he was able to actually kind of work his amazing skill behind the lens for it in a way that say another director like Eddie Romero, who Pam Grier also worked for, might either not be able to get away with, or let's face it, might not want to get away with.
Nice. Now, our villain, our main villain in here, is also female, which I will say again, since this was really my first time watching all the way through, kind of surprised me. Catherine Wall is the villain, played by Catherine Loader. And Miss Catherine. Oh, Scott, what do you think of Miss Catherine? Did you think that she was a good enough villain to counter the strength of Foxy Brown?
Oh, sure. She was a mean-spirited, cold white bitch.
Yeah.
And that's what they were. Now, there are other movies, other blaxploitation films where the villain is a female. I have not had a chance to actually sit down with it, but I understand Cleopatra Jones? Is it where Shelley Winters is in it? Is that the one?
I'm not sure.
I'm hoping so because otherwise I'm really off base. But also one of my absolute favorite blaxploitation films, Truck Turner. Nichelle Nichols in that movie, is like a million miles from Uhura in that role. That's amazing. But here's the thing, is that in a lot of these things, not only is there a female villain, but it's also the female villain is very loud and brassy and really in your face. And this was a pretty understated villain. It was that kind of cold, menacing kind of villainy. If some kind of operatives for Spectre, we were bringing up James Bond before, so if some kind of operative for Spectre was just like running a prostitution and drug business in a city, you know, that's what you would get. You would get this person who was just really cold, calm, calculated behind the scenes, and who had lots of judges and law enforcement in her pocket. You know, that's what you would get. And I think that for this character worked. And I also liked what they did by actually trying to show that it wasn't just somebody on her own. It wasn't just a duo. It was a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to actually have an actual attraction and love for one another, even though they are both absolutely horrible people that you never actually want to be happy throughout the whole film. They actually did have an actual bond. So you could say, like, yeah, I can see these two creeps being a couple. Being a power couple, and they're like an evil power couple.
and her power, other half of power couple, I believe, was the Steve Elias character played by Peter Brown. And yeah, you're right. It was interesting to see them as a couple, though we knew who wore the pants in that couple. It was totally her. Glenn, how'd you feel about the villain in this, or the villain couple, I should say?
Good. And those pants are a bit looser.
Yeah.
For him.
For him.
So yeah, he could probably wear her pants now. So, yeah, no, I mean, I liked him. I actually would have liked to see a little bit more of him, probably.
Yeah, I'll say that they weren't as prominent. I mean, they're there, but they're still not quite as prominent as you might have expected for them. But the time they do get on screen, I think they make the most of it. And Catherine does play it a little bit lower key, I think. Did you like the little lower key villain? Do you think that fit for the counter to Foxy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think lower key works better in general. For when you're talking this kind of, so many movie villains, they're so over the top, and it's like, God, how is no one in your organization just killed you already? So yeah, I think it works well, and I think it's played well.
I agree. How about you, Derek, and the villain couple, especially with the Miss Catherine character?
I kind of take a different approach to these two than you guys do. I kind of think they're in a mutually beneficial relationship. I really don't think I never saw them as she obviously is passionately in love with him, but there's sequences in which he, you know, is kind of faking it. And he's looking off while he's hugging her, saying, "Oh yes, I love you. Oh yes, I love you." And then he goes and does his own thing. He's following her orders to placate her. And I think he's just like, all of this is working for him in a way that gives him a life that he likes, but he's not necessarily as in love with her as she's in love with him. So it's a very interesting dynamic that you don't really see too much in a lot of movies. And it's a subtlety that I thought was really interesting, to be honest.
I just wanted to go along with what Derek's saying, because I can absolutely see that as well. It is more on her end than his, but do you think also, just to go along with what you're saying there, Derek, do you think that maybe if those two were allowed to continue to reign and still be in power, which it certainly looks like they won't be by the end of the movie, do you think that at one point he would just look for his own opening to basically cut her out of the picture?
Oh, of course. I think so. I think 100%. I think it was obvious that, because when you see, and this is a theme in a lot of Jack Hill movies, is that he always wants to place women in the seat of power and give them the upper hand and have the men kind of depend on the women. And his character is almost sort of crippled by the fact that she's almost a mother to him in a very strange way. And there's that, like I said before, it's a mutually beneficial relationship more than a loving relationship, for like a romantic relationship for him. And I think if there was that opportunity, he would have eased, because he, on the streets, he handled all of the business. He literally went out and did all the dirty work. He flew all over the world while she just kind of sat in her ivory tower and bossed people around. So I have a feeling, I would take that angle, Scott.
Well, someone had to keep the other escorts in line.
Well, I think it was more that she loved him.
Yeah.
Much more.
Very much.
Yeah. Which would explain how she truly loses it. I mean, she's been, as mentioned, she's cold and calm until, well, she gets, you know, the Oscar Mayer wiener delivered to her. And then she just, I mean, we see her lose it. And what I thought was interesting with this is Foxy doesn't kill Miss Catherine. Derek, what's up with that? We don't get the, you know, the final stroke, if you will, against her.
Yeah, that's the one part of the movie that I understand where they're going with, but I also feel I'm going to call bullshit on. I don't like how it ends. I understand, you know, the sentiment of what she's trying to evoke. But at the same time, she's laying waste to everyone else. I don't know why she didn't like mortally wound her.
Yeah.
How is she not just going to come back and do something? It like, to me, it's not a satisfying end.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can totally see that. And that's the one part I also have a problem with is, and I will say though, I think there's something else happening behind the scenes. I think that the vigilante force will make sure that they don't that they have they're out of power now. Mm-hmm. I think that she would not have done that unless there was something that could also take her out of that ivory tower. Unless there was something that say. And you know, this is all speculation and everything. But unless there was something to say, like maybe the little black book, which would have had like all the judges and everything in it, maybe they have that book now. Who knows? You know, something so that no, you're out of power now. Mm-hmm. You're done, and now you get to just you know hang out with your eunuch of a boyfriend, and you know. And every single person who ever said, man, if that bitch wasn't so powerful, I'd like to bring her down a peg, is going to get a chance to. Mm-hmm. You know, I agree. Yeah, the way it's written, because you got to fill in those blanks for yourself in order to make it make sense. The way it's written, yeah, it's mm-hmm. not great.
Glenn, how about you? Where do you weigh in on the ending to this? Was it a little bit of a anticlimax?
Yeah, that's it's one of the reasons why I like coffee better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
Because yeah, the ending, I'm just like, what? No, you can't. That doesn't
like, solve anything.
No, it's like, hey, I'm gonna really, really make you mad and then make you sad as well, and then just leave you alone.
It's gotta be a real Princess Bride type ending, you know. You know, they gotta do that.
It did kind of have that angle to it. Could it be because there's a certain couple of moments in this film where it almost felt like the film was trying to convey to the audience a different image for the African American community. And again, I'm just saying that it seemed like there were certain scenes in here where they were trying, it felt like they were trying to kind of get a message across. Scott, did you feel that way? And maybe this ending was them trying to do something different for a message or a reason?
Nah, I can't. I don't think I can go through with that. I'm sorry. I would like to say that, but I do think that it was a bit of a, even though I like to like fill in the blanks with in my head. Mm-hmm. About like, okay, well, here's what's missing from the ending, and here's how they're actually going to be taken down and everything like that. No, I think it's just they didn't have an ending. I think that the script was changed. The script mm-hmm. wasn't it? This thing was really rushed through development. It wasn't even supposed to be its own separate movie at one point. It was supposed to be a sequel to Copy.
Oh wow!
And I think that with all that kind of rigmarole and everything like that, I mean, according to the IMDb, it was shot in like just over 2 weeks. So I think they just didn't have mm-hmm. a strong ending after that huge, you know, airstrip battle. I don't think they just had anything. I don't think they had anything. Yeah. I think they said, oh yeah, and now we have this fun. And we really have nothing to do. What are we going to do? We're just going to shoot her? Well, they're kind of expecting us to shoot her. So what do we do? We're going to do, I guess we'll do this, you know? And mm-hmm. I think that the message of the movie was in everything else that came before it. I think the message of the movie was that in where her brother thought he was going to be a big person, but he was really just being used by the drugs and by the other crime pushers in the area, because Antonio Fargas has a wonderful monologue about his ambitions. I mean, it's really good. And that I think that was a statement. I think that the Michael Anderson character there, the who it sets Foxy off, I think that he had a lot of the message in the movie that, you know, no, we have to clean things up, and that the if the and then the vigilante force, if the cops won't do it, we will. I think it's about, I think it's really the real message of the movie was, it is, the deck is always stacked against African Americans in America today, especially in the city, and you can either try to get ahead your own way, or you can try to look, or you can try to pretend it's not happening, or you can actually stand up and fight and realize we all need to, meaning the Black community all needs to stand up for one another in order to get anything of substance done. I think that was the message. I don't think that the ending, no, right. Unfortunately, I think the ending was just a weak ending.
Gwen, would you agree with that? That there are some messages in here. The ending, though, wasn't one of them.
Yeah, no, the ending was definitely not. Uh-huh. I mean, unless the message was how to make sure that you have a pain in your ass sometime in the future.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe it was supposed to be for Coffee 3. Who knows?
Coffee 3. There you go. And Foxy Brown 2, Coffee 3. Foxy Coffee Brown. I don't know.
Coffee Brown.
There you go. Derek, would you agree?
I think one of the big takeaways, if you want to read more into it, of that ending is there's that sequence where she... It's not explicitly said it's a Black Panther group that she goes to. It's more of like a community gang. And there's that part where she tells them what she wants to accomplish and why she needs their help. And the leader goes, well, I'm not so sure we want to help you because this sounds like revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that speaks a lot to what the overall message they wanted to get across for this was that they didn't want to portray themselves as heartless killers. Mm-hmm. They were there for justice for their community and making sure that nobody was being exploited and put down. And then Foxy looks at her and says, no, I want you guys handle the justice. I'll handle the revenge.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks a lot to not only her character, but kind of the overall vibe of this movie in general. And then, of course, the end completely. I mean, she doesn't not only they get the justice that they want, but the revenge. Maybe she changes her heart and decides that the justice needs to be what prevails at the end of the day. Maybe that's the whole point.
That might be. I like all those ideas. It could be that she thought, well, she came to the realization maybe that, well, I've done enough to these two and it has been served more or less. So we're going to go down to group now. I want to see if anybody here has a topic we haven't talked about yet tonight. So Scott, let's start with you first. Usually we end with you on these. So did you have an item or topic that we haven't discussed already that you may want to talk about with Foxy Brown?
Well, I like the cast a lot in this movie. A lot of this, like a lot of Black exploitation films today, it has a wonderful supporting cast. You got Antonio Fargas, as I mentioned. You got Terry Carter. One person I want to mention is who is not part of the Black ensemble is, and I said the same thing. As soon as I watched the movie, I posted this again on this very quote on Facebook. Has there ever been a movie that has not been made at least a little bit better by the presence of Sid Haig? And of course, Sid Haig has been in, I think, virtually all of Jack Hill's movies. Mm-hmm. Even the bit he did for Bloodbath, he was in that. And he gets he doesn't show up till late here, and it's not a very big part, but it's like, oh man, he's so good. in these movies. And, you know, so he was in this. He was in Coffee. Of course, he has a wonderful role that almost steals the show in Black Mama, White Mama. And I just think he's such a good actor. He's such a good personality. Everybody knows him as Captain Spaulding. I think he's just a really – I think he can be everything. I think that he's – here in this movie, he's just this great, good old boy character. So that's always fun to see. He's done films where, of course, he's been really scary. And he's got the Captain Spaulding character where they kind of think, oh, he's kind of silly and scary there. I love him in a movie. I will get any opening in any show to put a plug in for this movie because it's a movie that not a lot of people have heard of. It's not easy to find. It's the best clown Sid Haig ever played. And in fact, it's actually the best part he ever played, in my opinion. A film called Little Big Top, in which he plays a third generation clown. And he's a miserable son of a bitch. He's horrible to everybody. But he takes over the big top of this struggling circus. And eventually he's kind of through his life kind of shows him that, okay, I have to be a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful performance. But if you look at a great starring role like that to everything to like a small part like this in Coffee, Sid Haig, let's just hear from people. Have you ever seen a movie and said, boy, Sid Haig really stunk that movie?
Yeah, Return of the Living Dead 5, or was it 4? One of those where
really?
He's literally in it for all of like 3 minutes. And you're like, dude, you just got a check. Good for you. But I'm really? Like, man, I want more.
Maybe they didn't get him enough for enough days. There was a lot of stuff where, you know, people would say, Sid Haig in, and you could tell that, oh, you had him for a day, didn't you? Because he sticks to this one location for the whole movie, you know, and everything like that. But I don't think I ever saw a movie where I didn't go away saying, like, God, I like Sid Haig.
Well, awesome.
Even some of the crappy movies, like you mentioned Return of the Living Dead Part 5 or whatever. Let's go back to some of those crappy Night of the Living Dead ones we were looking at last year, Derek. He was in a couple of those. He was in
3D.
He was in 3D, and he was in that Mimesis one, wasn't he?
Yeah, for just like a real clickbaity, like, opening shot. I think he was bookended for maybe 3 minutes in that movie.
Yeah, he was in the movie, and then they popped him up later, and but again, even those movies, which were not good, I was like, I like Sid Haig.
So out of the minor characters, Glenn, what would you think of Sid Haig? Did he help improve the film?
Yeah, sure.
Does he improve any film he's in?
Usually. I mean, he's been in. He's been in some bad films too.
Yeah, well, he's been in a lot of bad films.
A lot of bad films. So there are some films that a million Sid Haigs couldn't help.
But Sid Haig was at least good in it.
Sure.
Did you have any other minor characters besides Sid Haig's character that maybe stood out for you, Glenn?
Not really. I really liked the two cops at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Just so just not interested in this guy where it's like yeah, and whatever. Just another black guy. We're going to get in our car and drive away.
Yeah, those guys were hilarious. Derek, how about you? Sid Haig make it better? Was he your favorite side character?
Well, that whole sequence is hilarious. He's basically at a bar talking to some other chicks, and then he's like, oh, well, sorry, I got to cut this short. My future just walked in, and he just breaks it, goes over, and he takes her flying. It's a great sequence.
Yeah, and then she's acting drunk in the plane, and he's like thinking he might get some action.
yeah, no, that's one of the best parts of the movie. I honestly think, I'm trying to think of ways that this movie could have been. I like this movie. I'm just trying to think if we're going to talk about bits of the movie that necessarily weren't as good. That probably I could have used more Sid Hagen. I love Antonio Fargas in almost everything. His character gets a little old in this movie for me. And it pains me to say it. He's basically just a plot device.
Yeah.
In this one. So if anything, I would rather have had more Sid Hagen, less Antonio Fargas. And I can't believe I just said that.
Oh, wow. I love that monologue he gives. Oh. And then as big of a creep as he is, and he is a total creep in this movie for what he does, that when his final fate comes in, I mean, like, even despite what a horrible person he was being and what a horrible thing he had done, I actually felt bad for those two.
Yeah, you do feel bad for him and his girlfriend.
The girlfriend didn't do anything wrong. She just
fuck her.
Yeah, well, no, but you feel bad for.
Well, I mean, it was brutal. She was just a junkie. I mean, like,
yeah. Oh, you meant the two? You mean him and Foxy?
No, I meant him and his girlfriend.
Oh, you did mean his girlfriend. Okay, I just checked. No, he does get that great monologue, but I can see where Derek's coming from on that. Is his character does feel a little bit like he's just the plot device, a little bit one note on it, but he does get
that all the time. I mean, at times, and there are, like Scott said, there are moments where that I really like of him in this, but yeah, as I said, it just, like, there's moments that also just feel like, okay, well, he's only in this to move to for the convenience of the plot, you know.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I can see that. I'll tell you who was kind of a surprise to see pop up in here was Harry Holcomb in here as the judge. He's Judge Fenton in here, who I believe is the judge who gets his pants taken off by Foxy and the other prostitute. And he's been in some funny, more family friendly films. So
yeah,
to see him play that character, you know. I mean, but yeah, the guy, everyone that you mentioned too, I really enjoy. The supporting cast is just as much fun as our main characters, definitely, in this film. So Glenn, how about you? Do you have a topic or something that you wanted us to talk about we haven't touched on already?
I don't think so. I think we've pretty much covered Foxy more than she should be covered.
Well, Glenn, are you wearing pants now?
I never wear pants.
That's true. You do never wear.
I'm in the house. No.
And Derek, how about you? Is there something we haven't covered already that you maybe wanted to talk about with the group or bring up?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about the soundtrack. I think Blaxploitation, other than it's just pure nature of it being a vehicle like for African-American actors to be in action films and be marketed towards African-Americans, that what gives them such character is this music. And they are time capsules. And this music is just so fun. It's soulful. It's catchy. And it gives, it's a character in and of itself in all of these movies. And even though I don't, this isn't necessarily just a question or maybe a topic just for Foxy Brown, but I do consider Foxy Brown's soundtrack to be awesome. What would be the panel's like favorite Blaxploitation soundtrack? Would Foxy Brown get in that? Or, I mean, what would be your favorite one? I would have to say this isn't my favorite one. I still think Curtis Mayfield's Superfly. I listen to that all the time. It's one of the most amazing records in general ever created. But what's the panel's favorite Blaxploitation soundtrack?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Oh,
Glenn?
My God.
Glenn, do you have one?
No. I'm not gonna be able to answer that.
Too many.
My memory isn't like Scott and Derek when it comes to stuff like that.
Sure. Scott, how about you?
I am going to weasel out and plead the fifth on this because there are too many good ones. I have a friend, Austin Kennedy, who does his he's doing the ninth a show right now where he's covering every single film made in 1973, of course, so he's covering a lot of blaxploitation films, and he has a collection of blaxploitation soundtracks that he plays over and over and over again. And I mean, come on, you got this. You got Black Belt Jones with that great theme song. You've got Curtis Mayfield supervisor, which is might be the best. I don't know. You got James Brown. Contributing to Black Caesar and God, was it Slaughter?
I don't think it was Slaughter.
It was something else. Oh, God, now I'm blanking on that one. But I mean, there's so many good soundtracks to blaxploitation films that and of course, you know, Shaft.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that is iconic. That is absolutely iconic. It was Slaughter's big ripoff. That's where I got mixed up. It was Slaughter. It was not right. The first Slaughter. It was the second Slaughter because it was on Austin's show. That's why I knew it. And,
don't forget about Gene Page's soundtrack for Blackula.
Oh, my God. See, well, there you go. See, it just keeps on going and going and going and going. I haven't even heard, you know, Isaac Hayes did Truck Turner also. It's my, which I'd say is one of my favorites. You know, Marvin Gaye contributed to a soundtrack of a film I haven't even seen yet. You know, so I mean, it's like this was like the 70s was a time of just wonderful soundtracks, and the best were usually the blaxploitation soundtracks. So I am going to have to weasel out because there's no way I could take one thing and pick from all of that, especially with so much to choose from. You know, because as soon as I said one, I think 2 hours after the show, I'd be like, no, this one, you know, so I can't do it.
I still listen all the time to that Superfly soundtrack. I listen it's to great. It a lot. But this one is right up in the. I had an iPod that had a bunch of these on it, and it was always this one, Blackula, and Superfly that I listened to over and over and over again. I mean, besides these movies, which are all usually pretty fun, it's the soundtracks that they are just so iconic and the music is so good that it's hard to not, you know, talk about this and let people know that they should go out there and reach out and find these things, because if you're a fan of like 70s soul or R&B or just good music in general, you need to seek this stuff. Willie Hutch's soundtrack to Foxy Brown is awesome.
Yeah, hearing the music in this film, it adds such an extra energy to the entire film. And I love all the soundtracks you guys mentioned. I've got Shaft on vinyl. And yeah, I love it. I listen to it a lot. Superfly is a great one. All of these soundtracks on these, you're right. They're their own character, and they add so much energy, and they give the films an original identity, I think.
Yeah, totally.
To them, you know, to separate them from the other exploitation films that would come out at that same time. These really have amazing soundtracks that are just different from, you know, I mean, you watch some of the other types of exploitation and there's kind of some moody 70s type of music to it a lot of times, not in everyone, but in some of them. But and then this one, man, it has its own identity and feel to it. And it's so much fun to listen to on their own. Definitely. It's hard to pick just one on these because, yeah, you go down a rabbit hole soon and you start thinking of all these other great ones and you just want to listen to them all because it's all just great music. And Foxy Brown definitely has a fantastic soundtrack to it. So we're going to wrap it up here tonight. Foxy Brown, seek this out. And once you watch this, you're going to probably want to watch more from not only Jack Hill, but from this genre, because these movies are a lot of fun, I think. Some great fun. And I think we'll go down the aisle here, and you probably know what they're going to say, but I'm going to ask them anyway, and then they can also shill themselves as well. But just give your final thought on Foxy Brown, on if you'd recommend it to someone who maybe has not watched anything from this genre, and where they can find you at. Derek, why don't we go with you first?
Foxy Brown, while it may not be my favorite Pam Grier movie, is still a quality Pam Grier movie and a quality Jack Hill movie. It, as everybody else on the panel had said, it breezes by really quickly because it's always forward moving. And Pam Grier is not only charismatic, she's incredibly beautiful to look at. So she's very easy on the eyes. And this is just a movie that is just so effortlessly fun. Well, okay, not the times where there's a lot of rape and a lot of really heavy shit going on, but it still has such a character and such an energy that it just breezes by, that I would easily recommend this amongst maybe the top 30% of blaxploitation films. It's not one of my favorite, still a great one, and obviously go check out that soundtrack. It's flipping awesome. I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. Go check it out. But you can find me and my podcast, Astro Radio Z, at astroradioz.com. It's on YouTube. It's on iTunes. It's on Stitcher. It's on Spreaker. I have no idea why I put it on Spreaker. Nobody listens to that. It's a dead format. If you like shitty exploitation and horror movies, I have a few out on Amazon. Swamp Head, Screaming in High Heels, Hole in the Wall. They're all available there. You can find them. Also, a new movie we had just put out with my friend Jason Paul Collum, Safe Inside, is available to view for rent digitally on Amazon. I'm not sure if it's on Prime yet. I know it's supposed to be going there, but if it's not there, it will be soon. You can get the DVD and Blu-ray there as well. So thanks for having me on, Mark.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on, Derek. And Glenn, how about you? Your thought with Foxy Brown, would you recommend it? And also, where can they find you at?
I would recommend it to anyone, absolutely anyone. Yes, watch this movie, watch Coffee, watch anything with Pam Grier. Watch them all. I don't care who you are. If you're a priest, go ahead. You'll love it. So yeah, I absolutely recommend Foxy Brown. It's a great snippet of cinema history. You know, that whole era. So. As far as where you can find me, on YouTube with the B-Movie Bunker with 31 Days of Horror coming up, I will finally be breaking my 4-month sabbatical to do 31 reviews, one every day for the month. You can also find me on my other podcast, Adventure Party, on Galactic Netcasts, or just follow me on Twitter at Guy in a Bunker.
Awesome. And Scotty D, your final thought with Foxy Brown, would you recommend it? And where can they find you at?
Yeah, I think I'd recommend it to just about anybody, whether you've seen 100 blaxploitation films or none. I think I'd recommend it to just about anybody, and anybody who didn't like this movie, not going to say it makes you a bad person, but I'm not sure I would want to know you. So I mean, it's just a great film because you got everything. You got all these greats working together. You got Pam Grier, who's just a powerhouse, just so amazing on the screen. Such a wonderful protagonist, and so much more than you would expect. And then you got behind the camera, you got written, directed by Jack Hill, who is one of the greatest, filmmakers, I think, ever, certainly one of the greatest exploitation filmmakers, and everything is just kind of firing on all cylinders in this one, despite the admittedly weak ending. So yeah, I'd recommend to anybody. You can catch me at moviocrity.com. It has not been updated that much in recent months because I'm kind of in a transitional year, basically, you know, new state, new job, new everything, and I kind of like took a step back from that until I could get more settled, and as soon as I am, it's going to get up and moving again. You can also catch episodes of my web series Moviocrity at YouTube, or catch them all at vimeo.com/channels/Moviocrity.
Awesome. And I want to thank our one viewer in the room who has stuck with us tonight listening in to talk about Foxy Brown. I too would recommend this film to just about anybody. Pam Grier is amazing in this. She definitely talented cast all around in this film. It's got an energy to it. It gives you a window into this era of cinema. Jack Hill really brings something a little bit more to a film that is in a genre that I think, you know, sometimes really gets a bad reputation, and rightly so for some of the films out there, but many of these other films I think sometimes get overlooked, and they've got some really great performances in here. And yeah, Foxy Brown's a badass. She's not only just a badass, she's super bad, as the song would say, and a perfect film to close out our Badass Women's Month. I hope you've enjoyed our Badass Women's Month. Yes, Halloween is just around the corner. Well, just about a month away, and we will be doing horror films. I've got some selected for next month, so stay tuned to that. I want to thank this panel for joining us tonight. And now, say goodnight, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Oh, yeah. Hey, all my Spoiler Room friends out there, if you like what you hear, why not head on over to iTunes and like, comment, and even subscribe to our channel. It always helps us out. Or you can find us on Stitcher Radio as well. You can drop us a tweet on the Twitter at Spoiler Room PDCS or Special Mark Pro. Look for us also on Facebook at the Spoiler Room Podcast or in the Special Mark Productions Facebook group. Let us know what movies or topics you'd like to be discussed in the Spoiler Room, where the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.